Walter, wondered who he was dancing with now. One evening when she got home from work, Mrs. Quinlan handed her a letter, postmarked New York. It was from Abigail, her friend from the boat ride over. They had exchanged addresses, and Teresa had written first. She sent a postcard with a picture of Boston Common in the snow. Abigail wrote that Teresa must look her up if she ever found herself in Queens. "Let's go for a weekend," she said to Nora that night. "She's only being polite. She's not inviting you," Nora said. The next day before breakfast, Teresa mentioned it again. "We could borrow Bobby's car, maybe. Charlie could drive." "Stop," Nora said. "I don't want to hear another word about New York." "I'll drop it if you'll go to the dance with me." Teresa smiled. She thought Nora would relent then. But her sister's face was humorless, cold. Nora turned and went down to the dining room. On a Tuesday in late September, as the first autumn breezes came through the windows, Teresa could wait no longer. Nora was out with Charlie, over at Lawrence and Babs's place for supper. Teresa was sore that they hadn't invited her. Babs, newly pregnant, said she was too fat to be seen out anywhere. She seemed able only to socialize with other dull, coupled-up types. Mrs. Quinlan sat in the parlor listening to Bishop Sheen on the wireless, drinking the one Tom Collins she allowed herself each night. The bishop's talks were the bright spot in her week. She said he had a voice like honey, the voice of an angel. Everyone in the house knew to be quiet or get out while she was listening. In her room, Teresa put on the green skirt Babs had given her. She tucked in her white blouse and slipped Nora's white cardigan over the top. She added a black leather belt that Babs said made her waist look impossibly small, and a pair of black pointed pumps on loan from Babs. Nora said she looked like a child learning to ice skate when she tried to walk in them. But they were so beautiful, Teresa didn't care. She brushed her hair gently so the curls would stay put. She walked down the stairs and out the door without anyone noticing. The cool air brushed her bare calves. A group of boys played ball on the green. They stopped and watched as she went by. She felt wonderful, riding the train alone for the first time. But once she reached the hall, her confidence faded. The doorman asked, "Aren't you with anyone?" A group of girls glanced over, making their disapproval known. Still, Teresa climbed the stairs to the second floor. When she stepped into the room, she felt the same excitement as ever. No one spoke to her for the first half hour. She shuffled back and forth, feeling a fool, as if everyone were looking at her, even though they weren't. But then a red-headed girl said, "I like your skirt." "Thanks," Teresa said. "I'm Rose. This is my sister Patty." They were twins, with red hair and freckles and bright green eyes.
"Did you come alone?" Patty asked.
"I did," Teresa said, feeling vaguely ashamed and remembering now how many Irish people in Roxbury and Dorchester Mrs. Quinlan knew personally. For all she knew, here were two of them. They might tattle on her. Then Mrs. Quinlan would tell Nora, and Teresa would be killed, murdered. But Patty only said,
"That was brave of you."
At home, she never would have dared go to a dance alone. But life in this place didn't feel quite real, like anything that happened here existed in a dream and would disappear when she woke the next morning. The twins went to the bar to get a soda and invited her along. Teresa was grateful. She stood chatting with them until at last Walter walked in. Handsome in his jacket and tie, his hair slicked back. It had been weeks. She wondered if he would remember. He noticed her right away and came over.
"Where have you been?"
he said. They danced for an hour, never even considered dancing with anyone else. Teresa wanted to stay until the band finished and the lights went up, but she knew she had to beat her sister home. Walter rode with her on the train. He asked her to meet him again the following week. She promised she would. He kissed her at the corner before letting her go on alone to the house. Teresa had been kissed exactly 7 times before. 6 of them were with Gareth O'Shaughnessy, a boy whom everyone in Milltown Malby called Bottle because his skin was so pale you could nearly see through it. Gareth was sweet, but he had enormous, awful lips that seemed to want to reel her in like a fish on the line. When she pulled away, her chin would be all wet. She had once kissed a jobber in town for a fair day. Teresa's whole family had been up early, getting the cattle ready to sell. At 4 in the morning, her grandmother splashed holy water on the cows, then sent her son-in-law and his children to town. Hours later, the jobber, having gotten a good price for his boss, had celebrated with several pints at one of the pubs on Main Street. He came upon Teresa alone just after. He said hello, and next she knew he was kissing her, the earthy taste of beer still in his mouth. Her first American kiss was something of a different order. Teresa glided down the hall on stockinged feet. In her room, she pulled the pins from her hair one by one, letting her brown curls fall against her shoulders. She hung her skirt and sweater in the closet. She felt a chill standing there undressed. She slipped into her nightgown and flopped onto her bed. She went over each moment of the evening in her mind uninterrupted. Before leaving home, Teresa swore to her gran that she would say her prayers every night in Boston, as she had in Ireland. Though her eyes ached for sleep, she got to her knees. The prayer she always started with was the one Nora said their mother had recited over them in their beds when they were babies. "Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here, ever this day be at my side, to light and guard, to rule and guide. Amen." Whenever she said it, Teresa thought of her family and her whole body hurt from missing them. She understood that it might be years before she could afford to go back, years before she would hear her brother's voice or the sound of her father laughing along to Living with Lynch on Radio Éireann. She thought of the worried frown on his face when he waited for the weather and the football results. She might never see her dear old gran again. Teresa pictured her, singing softly as she cooked dinner over the open fire. It must be quiet there now, with just the 3 of them. Boston was far more exciting than home. She liked the people in the house, but they would never be her family. Teresa even missed the animals. Since they were children, she and Nora had to milk the cows promptly at 6 o'clock in the evening. When they were young, they'd get a slap if they didn't rise the froth. She hadn't much enjoyed milking cows, but now she craved the quiet conversations she would have with them. She missed the haughty cats that lived in the barn and the sweet dogs which she often snuck into the house at night if it rained. She had once been caught bringing a piglet into her bed and gotten hit on the bottom with a wooden spoon. It seemed a grave injustice at the time. But when she thought of it now, she laughed and laughed. To the usual list of people she prayed for each night, her gran and her father, her sister and brother, her mother in heaven, she added one more. Walter McLean. Her true love, who would be her family one day. Teresa crossed herself and got back into bed. When Nora came in, she didn't suspect a thing. Teresa lay very still and kept her eyes shut, though she wanted to explode with the story of her night. She could hear someone walking about in the room upstairs. When she moved into the house, this was the hardest thing to get used to, the strange sound of footfalls overhead. That, and the way people came and went. For a time, there were three small children in the next room, Mrs. Quinlan's great nieces. Teresa assumed their parents were dead, but when she mentioned this to Charlie, he laughed.
"They live in Quincy," he said, "a few miles from here. They've so many children, 14, I think, or 15, that they sent a couple to live away for a while. A lot of people do it."
"Not any people I know," Teresa said. She felt indignant on the children's behalf. From then on, she was nicer to them and gave them what was left over of her cake after dinner. The following week, and the week after that, Teresa managed to see Walter again. He kissed her with such passion when they parted. But then, on two occasions, he wasn't there when he promised he would be. And after that, it seemed Nora would never go out. Teresa skipped her class to go to the dance once, but felt so guilty, so sure she'd be discovered, that it was hardly worth it. One night, after they had turned out the lights and Nora started to mumble in her sleep, Teresa slowly got out of bed. She reached into the closet in darkness, felt around for the right dress. She used her bare feet to find the shoes she was after, and even dared to take a pair of nylons from the dresser drawer. All of it in her arms, she stood still as a tree and listened. Her sister was asleep. Electrified by her own boldness, she got dressed in the bathroom and quickly left the house. The dance would be ending soon. When she arrived, she saw him, laughing, leading another girl across the floor. But when he saw her, Walter came right to her side.
"I thought you'd vanished," he said.
They danced and danced. The night felt like magic, something out of time. She could not believe that an hour ago she was lying in her bed, that she might have missed this. Walter pulled a flask from his pocket and took a sip, offered her one.
"Go on," he said.
She took the flask from him, sipped at it.
"That's good scotch," he said. "Have some more."
They danced and they drank, Teresa feeling dizzy in a way she adored. Walter said,
"You're beautiful, you know."
All the boys she had ever met were too shy to say a simple thing like that. She smiled.
"Come with me," he said. "I want to show you something."
He led her out into the hall and down the stairs, his hand on the small of her back. Teresa thought maybe they would go somewhere for a late dinner. But when they reached the first floor, instead of descending to the ground level, he led her down a corridor.
"What are you up to?"
she said with a laugh. He shushed her playfully took her by the hand. He opened a door into a large, dark closet and guided her inside. Walter closed the door gently behind them. He kissed her. He hugged her tight. In the darkness, he ran his hands down the back of her dress. Teresa stood completely still. The room smelled like cleaning solution. She thought about confession, of how impossible it would be to explain this to a priest. She could hear him unzipping his pants, the cool sound of the fabric falling to the floor. Walter raised her skirt, pulled down her knickers, and pushed her gently against the door. He came closer and closer until she could feel him pressing against her, and then inside her. Teresa gasped, and he laughed, kissing her neck. It hurt for a moment, but he kept going. And after a while, it felt marvelous. This became a ritual whenever they met, and it was heaven, better than any dance she had ever known. On a Thursday in December, she crept up the staircase, willing her footfalls to be silent. She knew her way in the dark, knew that the fourth stair from the bottom creaked in the middle, that the rug on the final step was worn down to nothing, and a person could slip if she wasn't careful. She stopped halfway up, removed her shoes. The house was silent. Teresa made it to the second floor landing and stood there a moment, listening. The door to Mrs. Quinlan's room was open a crack. She could tell it was dark on the other side. Tonight, Walter had told her he loved her. She was in the middle of a story when he said it. She was saying that she hadn't thought much about being Irish until she came to America. She saw that it meant more to a person here. Mrs. Quinlan had told her that on St. Patrick's Day, everyone had the day off, and the city threw a massive parade. Back home, the men might go to the pub or to the races if they had the money to spare. That was all. "I thought the people I knew here would be Americans mostly," she said. "But you're the only one I talk to. I can go days without hearing an American accent, besides the Quinlans. And you know, there are clubs in Boston for people from every part of Ireland. Bab's cousins go to the Tipperary. That's where they're from back home. Friends of theirs go to the Galway. I told Nora that..." Walter pressed a hand over her mouth.
"I think I'm falling in love."
As she remembered it now, she felt the same rush she had gotten right there in the moment. Teresa opened the bedroom door, undressed, and slipped under the covers. Then Nora shot up in her bed. "Turn on the light," she said. Teresa did as she was told. "Where have you been?" "Right here. You just woke me." "I saw you coming up the road. A girl your age has no business being alone on Dudley Street at this or any hour." "I just turned 18. "Exactly. I haven't been to Dudley Street. I was only out for a walk." Nora sighed. "Teresa, I have enough of my own worries. Please, don't do this to me." "It won't happen again," she said. "I swear." "I won't be here much longer," Nora said. "You have to start behaving yourself."
"Where will you be?"
"Once we're married, Charlie and I will move somewhere else. Not far, but still." Teresa thought it would be ages before that ever happened, if that ever happened. Her sister kept a closer eye on her from then on, but still she saw Walter as often as she could, She loved him, though he was not the most reliable man. They might make a plan to meet for dinner, and he'd let her sit in the restaurant alone for hours waiting. But when she saw him again, it ceased to matter. She loved him that much. One rainy Wednesday in March, Teresa sat down at the crowded breakfast table. "He's the handsomest man I've ever seen," said one of the two Elizabeths. "Who is?" Teresa asked. "Senator Kennedy," she said, as if it should be obvious. They had all seen him passing by in the St. Patrick's Day parade the weekend before.
"He'll be president one day," Aunt Nellie said. "An Irish president. A Catholic. Imagine that. I wish my husband had lived to see it."
"Don't count your chickens," Mrs. Quinlan said.
"Why shouldn't I?"
"It's bad luck, for one thing.
Catholics don't believe in luck."
"I loved his wife's coat," Nora said. "It was beautiful."
"I'll get you one just like it," Charlie said. "I bet it didn't cost much, right? Heck, we'll get two," he laughed.
Nora glanced at him quickly, then looked away as if she had mistaken him for somebody else. Mrs. Quinlan said, "Teresa, Nora, you'll be getting a new roommate this weekend."
"A new roommate?" Teresa said,
wondering who and for how long, but not daring to ask too many questions while her sister was in the room. "Yes," Mrs. Quinlan said. "Kitty's coming back."
"Kitty?"
"Charlie's sister," Nora said. "You know who she is." Back in Milltown Malaby, Teresa was only vaguely aware of Kitty Rafferty's existence. They were probably 10 years apart.
"Where has she been until now?" Teresa asked.
No one responded. Aunt Nellie asked for the jam, and someone passed it. As she spread the strawberries across a thick white slice of bread, she looked at Teresa and raised an eyebrow, as if to say there was a fine story there. Teresa and Nora returned from Mass on Sunday to find that Kitty had moved in her things. Kitty didn't say much to them. She was gone a lot, out with friends late into the evening and off to work in the morning before Teresa and Nora were even awake. When Kitty got to Boston years ago, she too had worked in Mrs. Burns' shop, but over time she earned her degree and became a nurse at St. Margaret's Hospital. Teresa wanted her to know that she was on a similar path, that she wasn't going to be stitching hems forever. But she couldn't say it. Kitty left her tongue-tied. Before Kitty moved in, Teresa had spent hours in front of the bedroom mirror, turning her head this way and that, pouting and smiling and laughing. Everyone said she was pretty. But once she had the up-close view of Kitty Rafferty, Teresa realized that she herself was plain. Kitty was the closest thing to Elizabeth Taylor she had ever seen in real life. She had those sharp contrasts to her face, milky white skin and bright green eyes, though her hair was a gorgeous shade of auburn. She was tall as her brothers. When Kitty stood, she curved her shoulders forward slightly, as if to take a few inches off. Under Babs's tutelage, Teresa had purchased one pink lipstick. She could never decide if it looked good on her, but she continued to wear it anyway. She also had a tube of black mascara, a prized possession. Kitty had more makeup than a fashion model. She laid it out on the dresser, pushing aside Teresa's hairbrush and her rarely perused Bible to make room for perfume, for eyeshadow and blush, for black eyeliner and two fat white powder puffs in white porcelain jars. When Kitty was out, Teresa looked through her things. She once dared to spritz a fine mist of Kitty's perfume, and then sat fretting for the next hour, afraid of what might happen if Kitty or Nora came in and smelled it in the air. Kitty came to breakfast one morning in a pair of bright blue capri pants and a sleeveless button-down shirt, looking like something from a magazine. Teresa vowed to save her money to buy an identical outfit. 2 years ago, Enda Kelly had horrified everyone in Milltown Malby when she walked into the chemist's with a visiting American cousin, a teenage girl in blue jeans. Teresa hadn't seen her, but her friend Sheila reported that the old ladies in line shook their heads in disgust. Nora said the poor girl probably felt mortified when she realized how out of place she was there. But Teresa doubted it bothered her. She guessed that the American cousin felt superior to them all and went on with her day. That's how she wanted it to be when she went back. She would cause a stir and barely notice. Teresa begged her sister for the full story about Kitty. Nora told her not to be nosy. But after a week, she relented. The two of them were in their beds, tucked in beneath the covers. Kitty wasn't home yet. Nora was in a rare and lovely mood, light and unguarded, the way Teresa liked her best.
2 years ago, she ran off and married a Protestant, a doctor, Nora whispered. No one's heard from her since. Charlie supposes now the doctor's gone and left her, and so she's back.
Teresa had never heard of a married woman living without her husband, unless he was dead.
No one says anything about it, she said.
Nora seemed amazed by her surprise.
They wouldn't know, would they?
Do you like her? Teresa asked.
I don't know.
You should make friends. She'll be your sister-in-law soon.
Nora didn't say anything.
Well, won't she?
If we get married, then yes.
If, Teresa said. Charlie's been after me to set a date. Every time I think of it, I want to be sick.
Teresa was thrilled to be let in on her sister's private thoughts. She started to reply, but the door opened then, and Kitty said,
"It's only me."
It didn't seem like something she would say. Under normal conditions, she would have barged in as if this were her room alone. And so they knew that Kitty had heard it all, or some part of it anyway. When she turned her back to them, taking hold of a hanger in the closet, Nora widened her eyes at Teresa, then closed them tight, as if to erase the moment from her mind.
Chapter 5 Teresa was on her way to the tub when Kitty Rafferty pushed past her into the bathroom.
Sorry, I need to get in there. I've had a visit from my little friend, and I'm headed out the door.
Teresa waited outside in her robe. No matter how she timed it, a bath was never a simple proposition. 13 people shared this bathroom. Mrs. Quinlan didn't like them to bathe more than once a week.
Saturday's wash for Sunday's dash will do you fine, she said.
But even then, there was usually some complication. When Kitty came out, Teresa went in and ran the water. She undressed as she waited for the tub to fill. Kitty's mention of her little friend put Teresa in mind of her own. When she first got to Boston, she didn't bleed for 3 months. But after that, her period arrived just when she expected it. Until recently. How long had it been? She tried to recall as she sank into the bath. Teresa ran a hand over her stomach. Was there a rise there that she hadn't noticed before? Or was she imagining it?
She lay still until the water grew cool, and then she added more. A thought crossed her mind. There was a pounding at the door. She shot upright.
"Well, we're young, Teresa,"
shouted Aunt Nellie, who was 85. She stood and dried off in haste, then pulled on her robe and went to the bedroom. Aunt Nellie called after her.
"I was 12 when you went in there."
Alone in the bedroom, Teresa let the robe fall to the floor and looked down at her belly. Next moment, the door flew open. "Sorry, I left my..." Kitty's eyes landed on Teresa's naked body. She slammed the door shut, leaning up against it as if fending off a mob.
"Jesus," she whispered. "Are you pregnant?"
Was it possible to know something fully and yet not know it at all? The truth came to light, and still Teresa said, "Of course I'm not."
"Do you know how babies are conceived?"
Teresa thought she did, vaguely, though no one had ever told her. She nodded.
Has someone, some man, done something to you?"
"No." "Well, yes, in a way."
"When?"
"It's happened a few times." Kitty looked almost amused.
"That's where you sneak off to."
She seemed to catch herself. Her face turned serious. "Have you felt ill?" "No." But now that she thought of it, Teresa had been exhausted. Twice she fell asleep at work. Fasting before Mass had become a hardship. She snuck a slice of bread from the kitchen the previous Sunday. She had blamed it all on her late nights, on the hunger she worked up dancing. Kitty started pacing the room. "I'll get a cup at work and bring it home," she said. "I'll just take a sample to the hospital. I'll mark it Joan Doe. People do it all the time. Of course, they'll probably think it's mine." Kitty laughed, considering this. While she waited for the results, Teresa wanted more than anything to tell Nora. Every day at work, she'd stare at her sister until Nora said, "What's the matter with you?" She knew Nora would be furious over what she had done, but somehow she still didn't believe it could be true. At night, all three of them in their beds, Teresa bargained with God in her head. If he would just let it not be so, she would do anything. She did not sneak off to a dance even once. She didn't talk back to her sister. When she found out for sure, Teresa wept. Kitty made her go to a doctor to confirm it. He said she was 4 months along. She did not have to find a way to break the news to her sister because that same day, Kitty told Nora and Charlie.
"I can't be the only one who knows," she said. "I'm sorry."
The four of them gathered in the bedroom, trying to whisper. It was a relief, and it was a nightmare, having her sister know. Nora sat on her bed. She didn't say a thing. She wouldn't look at Teresa.
"They'll have to marry her," Charlie said.
"Do you want that?" Kitty asked. "Could you marry this man?" Teresa was too fearful even to find the words.
"I thought," she began, "someday..."
"It's not the time, Charlie," Kitty said. "She's too young." "I forgot. We've got a marriage expert present," he said.
"Why are you angry with me? I haven't done anything. We've all made mistakes, haven't we?"
"Some worse than others," he said. "Plenty of girls her age get married here. It's not like at home, where we're forced to wait until we're 100. Here, you decide these matters for yourself." That's just the point, Kitty said. She hasn't decided.
Where is he? Charlie said. Where does he live?
The thought of Charlie and Walter in the same place, discussing this, mortified her.
I don't know.
You don't know? Christ in heaven!
It's all right, Charlie.
Calm down, Kitty said.
I've talked to a nurse at the hospital who knows someone. It will cost $250. I don't know where we'll ever get that, but I can help a little.
Charlie shook his head, closed his eyes. He breathed in deep through his nose so all of them could hear.
I knew you would say that. I should have you sent home for even suggesting it.
Kitty laughed. I'd love to see you try.
If she won't be married, she'll go to St. Mary's,
Charlie said. Teresa watched them as if she were watching a play, as if it weren't her fate they were deciding.
You have no idea what you're asking of her, Kitty said.
My way will be easier.
Easier until she's burning in hell. Until we all are, since you've brought us into it. I won't allow it. It's a crime. It's a sin.
Teresa weighed her soul against her freedom. She had only just begun to know it.
Do you want this decision to be down to you, Charlie? Kitty asked. Do you want whatever happens on your shoulders?
He ignored her.
St. Mary's is a nice place, Teresa, he said. Run by nuns. It's next door to the hospital where Kitty works. You'll go away for the last few months. Then you'll have the baby at St. Margaret's. No one ever has to know.
How will she go away? Kitty asked.
She came to Teresa's side.
If you do what I tell you, you'll have a short visit to a doctor's office. It would be like getting your tonsils out. It will all be over in a day or two.
A doctor's office,
Charlie cried.
It'll be a short visit, Teresa, provided you don't die on the good doctor's table.
Teresa had never seen him like this. Serious, stern, all his humor drained away. She felt the full force of it now. Die on the table or go to the nuns? She looked to her sister, but Nora sat staring straight ahead, saying nothing.
Nora, Teresa said softly, what should I do?
You don't ask me that now, her sister said. It's too late for that.
Please don't tell Daddy, she said. I'm begging you.
Nora closed her eyes.
Is that all you can think of? She said. Oh, Teresa.
It was decided that Teresa would go to St. Mary's at 5 months and stay until the baby was born. Nora made her swear that she would never see Walter again. Teresa agreed, but she could not leave him wondering. She went to the next dance as planned, met him outside. When Walter reached for his wallet to pay their way in, she put a hand on his and said, "Let's take a walk." She told him what had happened and felt her body flood with shame, as if they had not done the thing together. He didn't believe her at first. He said she didn't look pregnant, and he should know. But Walter had only ever seen her body in the dark. Teresa told him her plan, and he nodded along. He said he knew a girl who'd gone to St. Mary's once. He told her he loved her. He said,
I'll be here when you come back.
Teresa felt overcome with a deep disappointment she couldn't quite name. Maybe she had wished that he would ask her to marry him, despite what she'd said.
You can visit me, she said.
I will then.
He kissed her goodnight. St. Mary's was a small, unremarkable building tucked into the shadow of St. Margaret's Hospital. Teresa must have passed it a dozen times without ever wondering what went on inside. Charlie and Nora brought her when the time came. They told Mrs. Quinlan they had found Teresa a summer job on the Cape, cleaning in some visiting family's beach house, the job she had always wanted. In the fall, Teresa would start teaching, so nobody minded much when she left the seamstress's shop and went off for what Charlie described as her last hurrah.
"You've done the right thing," he said before they parted ways on the sidewalk. "Remember that."
Nora walked Teresa to the door. The nun who answered had a warm smile. She introduced herself as Sister Josephine.
"Come now. I'll take you to meet Sister Bernadette. She's in charge of intake."
Nora held back, waiting until Sister Josephine said,
"You can come in for this part."
She led them both to an office at the end of a dark hall. Sister Bernadette had an intimidating bosom, a slight mustache. She rose from her desk when they stepped into the room and stayed on her feet while she spoke, her fingers knotted together as if in prayer.
"You girls are from Ireland?"
"Yes, sister," Nora said.
"And does your mother know about your situation?"
She was looking at Teresa now.
"My mother is dead, sister."
"Your father, then?"
"No."
"Where is he?"
"Back home."
"Whereabouts is that?"
"In the west, County Clare."
"I don't suppose you know the O'Rourke family in Killarney. Ailish O'Rourke?" She paused. "No, why would you?"
When Teresa didn't reply, the nun said,
"You do realize you've committed a mortal sin. Have you been to confession? Have you told a priest?"
"No, sister," Teresa said.
Nora straightened in her chair.
"Well, you will while you're here. You'll behave, and you'll be brought back to the path of righteousness. You can get on with your life, put this behind you. The baby will go to a good Catholic family. We consider it a gift to them from God."
"Have they already been chosen?" Nora asked.
"Yes."
"Will I meet them?"
Teresa said. Sister Bernadette shook her head. Teresa nodded, relieved. She envisioned the moment when she would leave this place and finally be herself again. She wondered how soon Walter would come.
"Are we understood?"
"Yes, sister."
"Good."
Sister Bernadette passed a pen and paper across the table.
"Sign that," she said.
Teresa did as she was told. She looked at Nora, and Nora forced a smile. Sister Josephine was waiting in the hall. She guided them back the way they came.
"I'll just show you out," she said to Nora.
Before they parted, Nora hugged her so tight, Teresa thought her ribs might crack. She didn't want her to pull away. She watched as Nora slowly descended the stairs to the sidewalk, to Charlie waiting in the car. The door closed, taking the light with it. Sister Josephine led her up a long marble staircase. At the top, doors on either side lined a wood-paneled corridor. The nun went to one of the doors and pushed it open.
"This will be your room," she said. "You'll have two roommates, Susan and May. These are not their real names, and you're not to tell them yours. As long as you're here, you are Kate. Do you understand?"
Teresa wanted to go home, to undo all of this. But she held back her tears and said she understood. The bedroom had white walls and three single beds. They weren't permitted to bring anything of a personal nature, photos or makeup or magazines. She thought of the room she shared with Nora, with Kitty, bursting with signs of life. Here, the beds were neatly made, covered in plain white blankets. The room looked like no one had ever set foot in it. The only thing out of the ordinary was the one window boarded over with planks of wood nailed into the frame on either side. Within 5 minutes of meeting her roommates, Teresa learned that Susan's real name was Patricia and May's was Elizabeth. When Elizabeth left the room, Patricia whispered that she was soft in the head. She wouldn't say how she'd gotten pregnant, but Patricia suspected something awful had happened to her. On her first night at St. Mary's, Elizabeth had tried to throw herself out the bedroom window. Patricia held her back. The next day, a priest came around with the wood and the hammer and nails. Each day at lunch, they ate stewed tomatoes on white bread. The nuns made them take a water pill to keep from retaining fluid. On Monday afternoons, the doctor examined them. A bell rang and they lined up in the hall. Teresa felt shame course through her when the time came to lie on the table and open her legs. It was unimaginable that those brief moments of pleasure with Walter had led her here. They attended Mass in the parlor each morning. Afterward, Sister Bernadette spoke to them about their sins and how they might use their free hours to atone. Once, a girl about Teresa's age raised her hand and asked how they should tell their future husbands about all this.
"Don't," the nun said plainly. "No man would want to marry a girl like that."
She thought of Walter, how he wasn't like other men. He hadn't blamed her for being here. He hadn't come to see her yet. She wondered if he was all right. A nagging thought hung at the edges of her mind, but she refused to let it in. In the dark at night, Teresa's roommates cried. They were louder than they might have been if they weren't trying so hard to be quiet. Patricia told her that she didn't want to give her baby up, that she could feel the child kicking, begging her not to go away. She had gotten pregnant by her boyfriend. Her parents made her swear never to tell him what happened. The boyfriend thought she was a counselor at a summer camp in New Hampshire. Patricia said they would still be married one day. Teresa cried for Walter, not for the baby. But no one could tell the difference. Her breasts grew swollen, foreign as the weeks passed. Her belly stretched taut like a drum. She didn't think of the thing inside her as a child. It was something happening to her, besieging her, which would pass like any unwanted boil or bruise or flu. She felt horribly lonesome. She thought God had been creative, punishing her for going out to the dances on her own by leaving her truly alone here. Sometimes, late at night, she was awakened by screaming. Girls disappeared and weren't spoken of again. One morning, a blonde let out a yelp in the breakfast room and grabbed her stomach, so alarmed by whatever sensation she felt there that she dropped a water glass, which shattered on the floor. The nuns hurried her out the door, and that was it. They never spoke of her again. Teresa wrote home to her family, just short notes about the weather. She hated lying to them and making Nora lie on her behalf. She said a novena for forgiveness. Nora visited one evening a week, as much as was allowed.
She was sometimes stern. She didn't say much. Other times, when Teresa herself was particularly sad, Nora endeavored to make her laugh and whispered that it would all be fine in the end. Teresa tried not to be hurt when, on Nora's second visit, her sister came in and said, "I have news." She sounded bashful, embarrassed.
"What is it?"
Teresa said. "Charlie and I were married over the weekend."
"What? Nora!"
"I hated to do it without you, but there was a cancellation at the church and Charlie had been wanting to get it done. It all happened so fast. The priest even waved the banns. We're moving our things into a new apartment. Mrs. Quinlan's helping me fix it up. You'll come and stay there with us when all this is over." Nora made no mention of what she had said about marrying him when they were alone together, that the very thought of it made her sick. The girls at St. Mary's were allowed one outing during their stay. After Teresa had been there 10 weeks, Nora and Charlie signed her out. They drove a long way in his cousin's car, nearly an hour's drive, all the way to a town called Hull. A pretty place, right on the ocean. It reminded Teresa of home. Charlie said they wouldn't be seen by anyone they knew there. They could go to a movie if she liked. The Apollo Theater glowed, massive, welcoming in the evening light. King Creole was showing, Elvis Presley in the starring role. Afterward, they strolled along beside the seawall. The ocean on one side and an amusement park all lit up across the road. Teresa wished they could go inside the gates. "Wouldn't this be a lovely place to live?" Nora said. She was in a particularly friendly mood, Teresa thought. Marriage suited her then. Nora walked ahead alone, taking in the scenery. People smiled at Teresa as she walked at Charlie's side. She thought they must have taken her for a proper wife, a soon-to-be mother. She loved the simplicity of the lie, the purity of it, when the truth had become such an ugly thing. When they dropped her off afterward, Charlie stayed in the car. Nora took Teresa to the door. "There's something I need to tell you," she said. Teresa could sense that Nora didn't want to say it. "It's about your Walter," she said finally. "Teresa, he's married."
"No,"
Teresa said.
"That's impossible."
"Charlie knows people who work at the Edison. They told him Walter has a wife. She had a baby not too long ago." Teresa's knees began to shake.
"Oh, it's awful," Nora said. "A married man, a father, behaving that way. The nerve of him. Really, the gall. I'm so sorry, Teresa. He's a snake. I'm glad you're rid of him."
Teresa thought of the nights he hadn't shown up for a date. He had never visited her here. She had forgiven all of it. She had blamed herself. She had never wondered for a moment if his absences hinted at some deeper transgression. A wife. A child. There was no worse piece of news her sister could have delivered. Walter's love had been the bright light in her thoughts, the one thing she had to look forward to when all this was behind her. She wanted to go after him, to rage at his doorstep, to demand that the truth not be the truth. Nora put her palms on Teresa's cheeks, holding them there, as if by doing so she might release some of the pain and take it upon herself.
"Don't be too sad," Nora said.
Please.
Teresa felt a sob welling in her chest. There's something else I want to discuss with you before I go, Nora said. It's very big news, in fact. Nora stopped. She couldn't get the words out. She inhaled deeply and then tried again. I've thought about it a lot, and I've decided. Charlie and I will take the baby when it's born. I've worked it all out. I already have everyone thinking I'm pregnant. I wear these big baggy dresses to work. I send Charlie alone to family parties, with stories about how I'm homesick in bed. She paused. This way, the child will be in your life, Teresa. I know you don't think you care about that now, but you will someday. Teresa thought of how Walter knew his way to that closet at the Intercolonial. He wasn't discovering it that first time. He was leading her someplace he'd already been. Teresa, Nora said, don't you have anything to say? I want to go to bed now, she said. I'm tired. This will be the best thing for everyone, Nora said. You'll see. The baby will stay in the family. All right, Teresa said. But she didn't care about a baby she had never met and couldn't even imagine. She cared about Walter, gone to her now. All night, she lay awake, thinking of him. After 15 weeks at St. Mary's, Teresa woke one night in what she took for a puddle of blood. She cried out. A moment later, Sister Josephine was at the door switching on the light. Teresa saw that it was not blood, but water. Sister Josephine called down the hall. Sister Bernadette, it's time! They brought a wheelchair in. Teresa was wheeled through a long tunnel she had never seen before. On the other side, they emerged into the bright maternity wing of St. Margaret's Hospital. Next thing, she was lying on a table, the nuns strapping her wrists down. God bless, said Sister Josephine. And they were gone. Teresa lay alone, screaming for what seemed like days. Every few hours, a nurse entered the room, checked her, and left without a word. Teresa begged the woman to help her, but the expression on the nurse's face was flat, as if she couldn't hear. The pain was intolerable, like nothing she had ever known. She stared out the window at a brick wall across the way. She tried to summon the courage of her own mother, who had done this at home 3 times. But then, her mother was probably surrounded by ladies from town, rubbing her back, telling her stories. Teresa wished she could locate a memory of her face. She screamed for Nora, half expecting her to hear. She slipped in and out of consciousness. Her head ached as if she had banged it against the table. She couldn't remember seeing day turn to night. She wailed. She bit down on her tongue until she tasted blood. After several hours, she swore she saw an image of the Virgin Mary flash on the brick wall outside. Teresa thought she must be dying, and accepted it willingly if the pain would only go. A doctor entered the room. Just before sunrise, her baby was born. She must have fallen asleep. Next she knew, she was lying there, her arms untied, but bloodied and bruised. Sister Josephine came in holding the child, wrapped in a blue blanket. Well done,
she said. Would you like to hold him?
Teresa said she would. She wanted to know if he looked